Hey, I'm Jillian.
And I'm Jessica.
And this is Not That Kind of Girl podcast. We wanted to create a platform for women to speak transparently
about their relationship to food and what they're learning along the way.
Trigger warning, we do speak very candidly about disordered eating, body dysmorphia, and everything under that umbrella.
So if that makes you uncomfortable in any way, please turn off this podcast and we wish you all the best.
Thanks for listening.
Welcome, welcome back to Not That Kind of Girl podcast. We actually have a friend of Jessica's on the podcast today. I'm super excited to chat with her. We are super excited to chat with her about her journey. Her name is Amal. Jess, do you want to tell our audience how you know Amal?
Sure, yeah. So I met Amal through a mutual friend. Her name is Natalie, and Amal ended up hiring me to come into her home and help her kind of organize and go through her closet. And while I was there, I was sharing with her some of my eating disorder issues and what I had gone through, and she shared with me that she had had similar experiences. And when Jillian and I started to do this podcast, I reached out to her to see if she would be willing to share her story, and she said she would, so she's here, and
we're so happy to have you. Thank you so much for taking time out of a very busy schedule. So Amal, we usually start with just kind of asking you your elevator pitch, who you are, what you do, and then from there, we usually ask, just to kind of start the conversation, if there was one moment that you remember where your relationship to your body image or your relationship to food shifted in a negative way, if there's like a certain memory you have. But we can just start with kind of who you are and what you do.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Amal. I am a 44-year-old woman that lives in Brooklyn. I work as a roadshow and event coordinator for a financial bank. I've been at my job for close to 18 years now, which is a bit of an oddity in these days, where most people don't tend to stay at their jobs for more than 4 years. Yeah, that's about it.
Amal, is there a moment that kind of sticks out to you, maybe where your relationship to like food or your body image shifted?
I do have a specific memory, and where I was at a point in my life, which was like eighth grade. And I had dealt with a lot of, you know, trauma leading up to that. It was really like a bit of a perfect storm, but, there was a memory where I had gotten sick. Like I got the flu, and I, wasn't really able to eat. And, I realized at that point that it kind of like, I could control something. And it was a time in my life that I needed to have a sense of control. You know, it was a bit of a false sense of empowerment. And I needed, like, I felt like I could control something. And so that was my first vivid memory of how my eating disorder started.
Did, like, from that moment, so you said you got the flu and you weren't really able to eat, did you sense that there was, like, were people making comments about, like, you know, if you had lost weight, or were you feeling like all of a sudden you just found this kind of control, that you liked the idea that you were, like, in charge of what was going in your body? Or, like, did you get outside feedback, or was that all internal?
There was so I think what got me to that point was a bit, you know, it was a confluence of like many different factors. I think the first factor was just like culture, right? I think that was the first thing that came to mind when I was like thinking about what I was going to talk about today. And it was like, but to take it a step further, it's being a woman in my culture, which is, Middle Eastern culture, which is, not very forgiving towards women, unfortunately. And, there was a lot of pressure to be, pretty and skinny because, you obviously wanted to find, the right husband, the right suitor. And then there was also, the other factors were there was external and, internal abuse, there was external and internal abuse, like stuff that was going on in my house and outside my house. And, that year, that eighth grade year, that vivid memory of me, getting sick, that year, the beginning of that school year is when my parents decided to move into more of like a middle class neighborhood where, I was discriminated against. And so, that at that juncture, at that point, it was just like, I needed a sense of control. I needed to control something because I felt like my life was out of my control. And just kind of being conscious of the fact that like I could control what I ate. And obviously it was very self-destructive as well, because I, obviously at that point just hated myself and hated my body because there was all these things happening to me that I didn't have control over. And, So I think there was a lot of factors that led to that. And it was ultimately control and destruction, of my body. I wanted to disappear in a way.
Yeah, I really relate to that, Amal. And it's been pretty interesting to talk to some of the other women who have been on, because there has been kind of a consistent story of both trauma, early childhood trauma, and abuses against the woman's body, and a violation of like her sort of autonomy and the need to maintain control over her experience. And food and body are such easy places to go, because there also is, or for me, there seemed to be this element of empowerment around like, oh, I can morph myself into exactly the thing that will give me value according to the society that I exist inside of. And then I'll have power. And, in a world where women, especially when we grew up, right, like you're 44, me too, I was born in 76. And yes, there was feminism, but we still didn't have a clear voice in the mainstream, which fortunately I think is changing a bit. But, I don't know. It's just been really eye-opening to be having these conversations and kind of like get really clear around, because it is such a lonely thing, right? Like when you're going through an eating disorder, you go to such a quiet place, and you said disappear. I felt that way too in all of the different iterations of eating disorders that have manifested at different times in my life. One of the key components has been like equal parts wanting to disappear and introvert, and also having some sense of ownership, autonomy, and power in that.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And there is that, you do go into survival mode, and there is a bit of that too, that element too of just surviving, figuring out ways of coping. And, food tends to be one of those things that help, people cope.
Okay. So Amal, so this happens in eighth grade, and you're like, okay, this is something I can control. Great. Okay. So then my next question for you is, how long did this eating disorder kind of last? And, was it always very consistent throughout your life, or did you kind of notice it as, you know, other things in your life started to settle? Did the eating disorder let up, or can you just kind of take us through like your journey up until today, essentially?
Yeah. I think that I was probably using food, but not in just the opposite way, where it's like I was probably overeating up until then. So I was, I wouldn't say a heavier, but I was a heavier set, you know, girl. And so right after that, you know, me getting sick and everything, there, in our health class, we were learning about calories and nutrition, and we had to keep a diary of what we ate for a month. And that's when I learned to count calories. And I think I became, well, I know I did. I became very obsessed with that and how less and how much. And so that definitely kind of spiraled it to another level. And I would say it was about a 2-year journey with anorexia. I was probably at 100 and, you know, 40 or 50 pounds when I started the school year that year, and then ended at like 95 pounds. My health teacher actually is the one who, obviously after, that's the other thing, I was being very honest in my journal, which definitely worried my teacher. And so she called my mother in, and they ended up weighing me. I wasn't at 95 pounds at that point, but I was definitely had lost a significant amount of weight in a very short amount of time. And that began a journey of like, you know, just, but it's like anorexia was, I was fainting. I was having like just like spells of fainting. And that worried my mother. And so, you know, we would go to the doctor, and they were monitoring me, like taking blood from me every time I would go, and just kind of making sure I was okay because of the whole fainting stuff. But my mom and I just didn't put two and two together. We didn't realize it was because of, you know, the lack of nutrition or the fainting. And I lost my period, and I developed a kind of a lazy eye, and was not very, I mean, like, it was ironic because I was obviously trying to fit in to some mold of, you know, whatever it I thought was kind of like pretty or beautiful, but I definitely was not looking like that at the end. So it was, yeah. So I remember going to the doctor, and he weighed me, and I was like 95 pounds. And I'm about 5'6" and a half. So it's really skinny. And it's crazy because every time I would look in the mirror, I would always see an old version of myself. I could never see that skinny girl that like did not look healthy in the mirror. It was just, it was so distorted. I remember like finishing the exam and getting dressed, and the doctor asked me to meet him in his office where my mom was. And I walked in, and my mom was like hysterically crying. And he was like, you know, I'm really worried. I think, you know, I'm thinking of like, you know, admitting you to the hospital. And I was just like, you know, please don't do that. Like, this is not that serious, you know? And so he was like, all right, well, you know, we're going to keep monitoring this. If you come back, you know, in a couple of weeks and you've lost even 1 pound, you know, I'm going to admit you to the hospital. And, you know, that was, you know, just seeing my mom in so much agony and pain, because in our culture, they don't really understand anorexia. And so she had no idea how to relate to me and what to do. She just felt, you know, out of control herself. And so, you know, it was hard to see my mom in pain like that. So I just kind of, you know, made the effort. He had referred me to a nutritionist who was going to help me put on weight, but obviously in a healthy way. And so that's kind of where I began the journey of like learning how to maintain, like, obviously the goal was to gain weight and I did. But also I still had that fear of, you know, getting overweight or being fat. So, but through the nutritionist, I was able to kind of like manage my weight in a healthy way. So that's kind of the journey. Yeah. And it's like, you know, you had posted something a few weeks ago, whatever, of like, you know, you should love your body because it's gotten you through like so much, right? Like, so when I was speaking to my therapist about like coming on and speaking on the podcast, we're like just going through my journey. And it was just like the first time just talking about it to her was like, holy shit. Like I went through so much, like this body has gone through so much. And like, yeah, like you have to love your body. Like, it's just like, it has gotten me through a lot, you know, and it's been through a lot. And I want to just, you know, I think I'm at a point where I want to show it love and compassion and, you know, just appreciation.
It's a tricky one. I mean, we're really taught in our culture to hate ourselves. We really are. I mean, from everything. And I'm not like, listen, I'm not against all forms of like beautifying yourself, right? Like I wear makeup when I want to feel pretty, or I like really beautiful clothes that are tailored well. But there is this kind of image of perfection that we're meant to embody. That's really detrimental. I mean, at 44 years old, I fell into a really extreme anorexic pattern. And like, it's still really staggering to me when I think about what I was going through last year, because like you were talking about, you know, you were really, really skinny and you developed this lazy eye and like you saw this old version of yourself. And it was the same for me. Like I would look in the mirror and I wasn't seeing someone who was sick and emaciated. I wasn't seeing someone who had gray skin, but I knew that like I knew that I was a certain weight, but it wasn't registering. And you know, it is this idea that you're supposed to achieve this like level of thinness, right?
Right.
To be considered beautiful. But I did not look healthy or vibrant or beautiful. I looked ill.
Mm-hmm.
But I only knew that because of what was being said to me. And because I don't trust outside voices because of the negative messaging that we're constantly getting as women for not being pretty enough or not being beautiful or not having this or not being that. I couldn't trust myself. I couldn't trust what I was hearing, because so oftentimes what we're told on all fronts from many different angles is false. So it became this like sort of mind fuck. You know, I was just like, okay, how do I get into the place of feeling? Like all I can do right now is just like shut down my image senses and get into my feeling senses. Like I have to pay attention now to the fact that when I'm laying on my back, it's painful.
Right.
I have to pay attention to the fact that when I'm trying to do any of my exercise, it hurts now.
Right.
Like my joints are painful. Like I had to go into that place because I couldn't rely on my vision, my outer vision.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know. It's just strange.
It's very strange. Yeah.
So Amal, I'm so glad that doctor, you know, kind of brought that attention to your mom, and then you were able to see a nutritionist and, you know, heal through that. Do you feel like that, like you were able to, like, really in high school heal that? And, like, do you ever feel it coming back up again? Or do you feel like you, like, really got a handle on that in high school? Because kind of like Jess was saying, you know, I feel like there are so many peaks and valleys when, you know, you deal with an eating disorder from trauma and at such a young age. I'm, like, so envious and impressed, like, that, you know, you were able to, like, find the nutritionist and learn. Do you feel like you were able to kind of carry that with you throughout, you know, the rest of your life?
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, peaks and valleys. And I think that for me, this is an ongoing, I don't know, journey. I think I had to learn, you know, for a long time. I mean, through high school, I think I managed to keep, you know, because I had the nutritionist, I managed to, but, you know, after that, after I stopped seeing the nutritionist and just kind of going, you know, through life and everything, you know, I had to learn how to be more mindful of, you know, and I was in denial for a long time that I was an emotional eater. And it wasn't until, like, you know, a few years ago that I realized, like, no, I am, you know, it's like, when I'm anxious, you know, I don't eat. And when I'm depressed, I eat. And, you know, that's just another form of, you know, an eating disorder, I feel. And so I had to definitely be more mindful of, like, okay, like, what is it that, you know, why am I doing this? Like, why do I have this urge to eat this? Or, you know, and also just be mindful of, like, when I'm happy, I tend to also, in a way, overeat, but it's more for, like, it feels good. It's pleasurable. It's different than when you're overeating and it's more of, like, it's destructive, right? Because there's no mindfulness to it. You're just eating. But, like, when I'm happy, I'm more conscious of what it is I'm putting in my body, and I'm actually choosing, you know, to take an extra bite of that cake or something like that. That's something that I'm choosing to do consciously. And, but it's been a journey. I mean, I through therapy and, I think yoga has helped me a great deal to connect with my body and, just have that comparison of, like, what it feels to not be healthy or to do yoga as opposed to, like, when I am healthy and when I am doing yoga. And, you know, it's also taught me obviously to connect to my body, but, like, it's also helped me to push my body, but in another way, right? In a healthy way. It's just like that extra, you know, stretch, that extra push, but it's just taught me to be healthier. So, but I think that for me, this will be an ongoing journey that I'm going to have to, you know, constantly be, you know, thinking of or conscious of. So I just, unfortunately, but I definitely know that I'm in a much healthier and better place than I was when I was that, you know, little girl in eighth grade who didn't know anything. You know, I was not prepared for all that. So I feel like now, you know, at 44, I have the tools and the knowledge. So that's definitely helpful.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I had a question about, you know, you mentioned your Middle Eastern culture and how, you know, women want to find their suitors, so they want to be pretty or thin. And I just wonder, like, as you know, you grew up and, you know, you had this extreme, you know, anorexia, and then, you know, you kind of healed it and you were taking these peaks and valleys. Like, are there family members or other friends in your culture that you were able to talk to about this, or is this something that is just not really talked about?
I think for a long time it wasn't talked about. It's not something that I think even my mom might not even understand till this day of like the effects that she had on me with that. You know, like it's funny because she couldn't understand why I was anorexic, right? But I was just like, what do you mean? Like, this is, you know, you contributed to all of this, you know? And obviously, you know, that's not easy for her, but it's, I think now it's definitely talked about more because of, you know, the younger generation, and, you know, them just being a little bit more open and honest with things. And just like, it's hard to deny, that this happens, right? I mean, there's social media and all that stuff that kind of, you know, brings it to light. So yeah, I think that there are some aspects that it's talked about more now, but I think, it definitely still exists. It hasn't gone away. Yeah.
No, yeah. No, it hasn't. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about this. There's this group of exercise people, and it's called the Skinny Bitch Collective.
Okay.
And I was kind of laughing about it today because I was reflecting on a lot of times when you're healing from anorexia, they recommend that you don't actually exercise. And one of the things that I was really excited about that I was able to maintain was an exercise regimen, because it actually helped me feel stronger and better. And it was important to me to maintain some sense of structure around this body thing as I was healing my relationship to food. But I was thinking about like the importance of choosing, like you were talking about yoga, right? Like choosing your exercise regimens wisely, choosing ones that help you to feel good, help you feel strong, connect you to your spirit. And I just like thought about the Skinny Bitch Collective, and just like the name of that already makes you feel like, oh, I have to maintain this particular body just to join into this exercise regimen, and just how toxic that is.
Yeah.
And I don't know if the environment is toxic, and the women are probably amazing and wonderful, and I'm passing judgment, but it does seem like a strange way to draw people into a kind of health and wellness environment.
Yeah. You're not passing judgment. Yeah. Like as a, I'm a fitness instructor, and I mean, I've also been doing that too, Jess. Like I go through my Instagram and I unfollow a lot of like old keto stuff I followed, and a lot of influencers that I used to follow. Like that is not a welcoming title. Like the Skinny Bitch Collective, like just those words, I'm already like, oh, I'll never be good enough to be in that collective. And I do this as, this is my job, you know, like I'm already shut down without even looking. So, you know, yeah. Anyways, I don't know where I was going with that, but I did want to say, Jess, you're not passing judgment. That is not a welcoming name, especially for, you know, someone that's trying to inspire other people to move their bodies.
Well, but that's my point, right? Is that like it's really related to this sort of model of beauty that we're meant to live up to. And there is a part of me that's like, I want to be skinny enough to be in the skinny bitch collective. But like, that's such a part of my conditioning. And then I like rail against that conditioning. And it makes me think about like, you know, Amal, you had said something about, how like emotional eating, right? And, eating too much versus right. not eating enough. And that swing between those two things. And it's like when I'm starving myself, I think I'm being very well controlled and I'm obeying the rules of my culture. And when I'm overeating, I'm almost in this like rebellious, reckless, abandoned, fuck it energy. And it really is about trying to find that balance of I'm going to choose to have a bite of this delicious cake because it is like nourishing my sensuality and my taste buds. And I know that I'm going to be able to like have that and have the enjoyment of that cake without losing control on either end of the spectrum. But I mean, I don't know where I'm going with this. Again, it's just like free association and conversation, but I just find it fascinating how the cultural messages kind of like embed themselves into our tissue. And then we sort of act out in different ways, you know, in rebellious ways or in like self-sabotage ways.
I feel like I totally understand what you're saying. I feel like what I'm doing right now, like actually healing, like this is the first time I ever remember having a healthy relationship and food not taking up 80% of my day, is like this is the most rebellious I think I've ever felt in my entire life. Because like I anorexic, great. Then I'm following whatever diet I'm following, great. I'm following the rules. I'm the skinny girl. I'm going to get the job. I'm going to get the husband, whatever. But like the bulimia for me, because Amal, I was bulimic, was like for sure, it wasn't rebellious. Like that was like almost like out of body for me. Like the starvation and then binging was like, I was almost watching myself do it. And I knew what was coming after. Like I wanted to punish myself. Like I almost like wanted to be like, yep, you fucked up. Like you, how dare you do that? Like, you know, like it was never, it's just funny, Jess, that you describe it as like, you know, rebellious, like from your experience. Cause like for me now, the most rebellious I've ever felt, which feels so empowering, is like that this is actually the first time that I don't feel like food has control and that I'm starting to break free from the chains that really have like taken up so much of my joy in my life. So I think it's interesting, like everyone's, you know, like different associations and experiences and like how we view things based on what society has embedded in us and what the expectations are within this, you know, this American culture.
Yeah. And I also think like, Jess, when you said, there's always like those extremes, right? It's like, for me, I was the same way. It was either anorexic or just like overeating. And, you know, there was that part of like the overeating and gaining weight that also was, it was like, I was gaining weight in order to be less attractive and kind of like a way of protecting myself. So that was just, it's crazy how your mind kind of just does these things to, again, it's a survival mode. And Jillian, for like, just, you know, we keep bringing up the word like empowerment. And I think like when we're in our eating disorder, there is that like sense of empowerment. Like we have some sort of control, but like, it's really a false sense of empowerment. And I think that like where you're at now with, you know, with food is real empowerment, right? Where it's not controlling your life. Like you actually have the power and not the food and not your eating disorder. Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's not like, you know, it's definitely a challenge. Like there are some days where I really want to like spiral back down or like, you know, it's just kind of changing, like not attaching to the thoughts that have been programmed in my mind and like disassociating a little bit from those. But I totally agree. It is. It's the first time that I'm like, oh, wow, okay, this really is. Like it doesn't have the control that it once did. And I hope that, you know, eventually it doesn't take up so much space in my brain.
Yeah. And I don't know if you like, we could look at like eating disorders as like an addiction in a way. Like we look at addiction, like people who have addictions, they're obviously going to be battling that addiction for most of their life. Right. So that's kind of how I view, eating disorders. It's kind of the same way where it's always going to be something that you're going to have to make sure you have control over or you're conscious of. And there's always going to be relapses, right? I mean, there's going to be times where, you know, life, things happen in life that are going to throw us off balance, and we might find ourselves going back there. But it's, I think the more we get back to that healthy place and that, you know, that control, that real control and empowerment is, it's so, I feel like we'll spend less time in our eating disorder and more time in that, you know, in that healthy space. It's going to be easier to get back on track.
Yeah. I mean, Amal, that's like essentially why I signed up for the program I did. And I kind of just was like, all right, everything else I've done has led me back to anorexia or bulimia. Every quote unquote diet or a healthy eating or Whole30, paleo, keto, low carb, whatever, still makes me like this. And I shouldn't, like, I'm no different than a girl that has a healthy relationship with food. Like, there's no reason that she can be able to, you know, essentially eat whatever she wants day to day and it not take up space, and I can't. So I kind of was like, all right, I'm just like, I'm going to do it. And I signed up for this program and I was so terrified, and like, I'm still terrified sometimes, but I like my intention and my hope is like, you know, I'll heal from this, and I hope that I never relapse again. Like, I hope that, because I too used to always say like, oh, it's just something I will always struggle with until the day I die, you know, like this is just part of me. And like within, you know, the work that I'm doing in this program, there's a lot of, you know, looking inward and creating your upward spiral and meditation. And, you know, we've barely even talked about food like so far in the program. So much of it is, you know, disconnecting from the 60 to 80,000 subconscious thoughts that you have. And so I think that's where a lot of my empowerment comes from. I'm like, holy shit, like this might actually be it. Like, I can now be the unicorn in the room that like I used to envy in my life, you know, like there's few and far between. I've met very few women that, you know, don't have some sort of challenging relationship with food or their body, but you know, the few that I have met or that have healed, I'm like, if she can do it, I absolutely can. And if I can, you absolutely can. And Jess absolutely can. And all of us absolutely can. So that's like definitely my like intention and my goal. Because then I feel like, okay, if I actually can do it, oh my gosh, incredible. Who else can I help do that? Like, who else can do this? Like, I want to share and spread this to every woman and to every young female so that we don't have to tell, so that we don't have to have these conversations, because, oh my gosh, what does a world look like where the patriarchy isn't like filling our heads with like beauty and being thin, and we're so conditioned from all these years and our parents and our grandparents, you know, like, whoa, is that possible? Like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, I spiraled a little bit.
Yeah. Well, no, that's great. No, and I hope it definitely, you know, I wish you the best of luck with that, and I hope it does, you know, get you to where you need to be. And there is that, like, Jess, you know, we also touched on like, you know, just working out, yoga, and just like having a workout regimen. And I think that's very important too, because it's when you're connected to your body, I think it's easier to make choices on like what to eat, you know, like you kind of know exactly what your body needs. You know, it's obviously like you start your day working out. It's like you start your day healthy, you know, and you kind of want to continue on that track, but it's also like connecting yourself to your body and like understanding it, what it is that your body wants and needs. And being able to make those choices based on that. So it is a sense of, I guess, control as well, but like in a healthy way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, it's funny. There's been so much talk about control. We really have. And I think any eating disorder really does boil down to feeling like you want to have some sense of autonomy over your experience. And I keep asking myself the question of like, what does it feel like to be truly embodied? What does it feel like to listen to my impulses? What does it feel like internally, like the essence of my being? What is it that I really need to nourish myself, and how do I keep that? How do I stay so attuned to that that I don't get knocked so far off center that I fall into these like holding on tight? It's like I'm driving a car, and if you're speeding and you're holding the wheel too tight, like that can be really dangerous because you're rigid. But if you're, you know, moving along on the road and you're driving the car and you're gripping the wheel and you have control over the wheel without feeling like you are gripping too hard, you're probably going to be able to maneuver a lot easier. And so it really, like, it becomes this question of like, how do I maintain and manage my experience in a way that is holistic? And how do I be best friends with the parts of me that are my shadow? Like, how do I not have to like push out the little anorexic girl and not pay attention to her at all and eradicate her experiences? And how do I not let her overtake me? Like, how do I like hold her hand and go, hey, this is a part of you. This is a part of your story, and it's an important part of your story. But that part of your story doesn't have to be the overbearing, overreaching part of your story. It can just be a part of what like helped you unfold into the person you are today, right? Like, how do we take our trauma and our suffering and not, I guess that's what I keep getting interested in my life right now, because I've had a lot of really dysfunctional partnerships and self-sacrifice and suffering and making myself small and not speaking my mind. It just, you know, all the things, right, that so many women experience. I'm not unique in that. But like, how do I let those be parts of the story that like help my essence actually shine forward? And how do we encourage other women to do that too?
So Amal, we usually, first of all, thank you so much for sharing. We really appreciate it. And I'm so thankful that I know you were a little nervous, but I'm really thankful that you decided to share with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. We usually ask if you could, go back in time to eighth grade Amal when you were just had the flu and you were just searching for control and you were kind of starting to go down, this anorexic behavior hole. If there was one thing you could have told her, what would you say to her?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a difficult one because I would probably tell her that, you know, things will get better and that you're not going to be in that space and those emotions and those feelings. You know, I think when you're in that age, it's like, you know, you feel like whatever you're feeling is like, you know, that is your world and that it's going to be your existence for the rest of your life. You know, it's hard to kind of imagine, you know, not being in it. And I think I would tell her that, like, you know, it's temporary, like, you know, things will get better and, you will be a woman that will be able to, have more control of her life and, you know, make her own choices and, yeah, just to be kind and patient. So, yeah.
It is beautiful. I also just had one other question for you.
Yeah.
What's one of your favorite things to eat right now?
Oh my God. So, I've actually made it today, but I can eat, I'm just a big soup. Like, I love soup and I love, making my own chicken broth, which I actually made today. So that's one of my favorite things to make and to eat. And it's also kind of nourishing and healthy at the same time, because I can add it to a bunch of, you know, I can make a soup with it, or I can add it to, you know, other things that I eat. But yeah, I like making my own chicken broth. Yeah.
Sounds so good.
Yeah.
Perfect for fall.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, I made it all through summer too. It's filling, and yeah, and I can also give a little bit to my dog. So it all works out.
So sweet.
Yeah. So yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And she sees me making it. She knows exactly what it is. It's so funny. And then she obviously smells it. So she's just like waiting, like, oh yes, I'm going to get some. Yeah.
Well, thank you for being willing to come on and talk to us.
Yeah. Same here. And, thanks for having me and letting me, you know, talk about my journey. And I think it was important to kind of, you know, get it out, and, you know, especially the whole cultural aspect of it. I think, more people need to talk about that. All right, ladies, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. And we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. All right.
So what I got out of the conversation with Amal, well, like she had mentioned, I think, you know, it's cool that we got to tap into another cultural paradigm, because I, you know, when I think about people from the Middle East, I wouldn't assume that they would have issues with food at all, because first of all, Middle Eastern food is like the most delicious food. It's like so decadent to me, and the spices are so flavorful, and it seems like, you know, just something that is enjoyed. So I was surprised to hear that she felt that pressure. So that was really, really interesting. And I also just what's becoming really apparent to me is just how important it is to offer women a sense of ownership over their experience from the time that they're in you know, seventh and eighth grade, because it does seem like that is the time when, obviously, like, our bodies are changing, mm-hmm. and we are losing control. You know, we don't have control over the physiological realities of puberty and our bodies. And so anything that we could do for our young women to help them feel empowered and strong as they move through those changes might help to quell, I think maybe is the right word, some of the impulses that, and if it's not the right word, sorry, guys, some of the impulses that would, you know, lead a young woman down the path of eating disorders. And I, like, as we were talking, I was feeling inspired to, like, create a program to go into schools and talk to young women about what they're going through in their bodies, really frankly, because I don't remember having that. And
oh, no.
I would have really loved to have that.
Yeah.
And a struggle from this week. I'm going to go with struggle because I'm going to get really honest. One of the areas that has come back as I've gotten back to a normal weight is my bust. And they've always been, you know, there. And I'm really struggling with that. That was one of the things that I really loved about being lighter, was that my boobs were smaller. And I know that that sounds so stupid and superficial, but they've just always been like a source of contention. So I guess my work is to try and like love them.
Or get a boob reduction, I guess you could.
I mean, I am not going to spend, like, if I'm going to spend $6,000 and 2 weeks of my life, I'm going to, like, go to the beach. It's just, Like, I'm going to have to learn to love my boobs because at the point that I'm spending that kind of money, like, I want to be in the ocean all day and, like, swimming with the fishes. So. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Over to you, darling.
All right. Yeah. What I took away from the conversation was... I think I just loved hearing, you know, I'm so grateful to Amal because I feel like we could kind of tell she was really nervous. And I know you were saying she was nervous and I was like trying to send her good energy and just like make sure she felt comfortable and like she could trust us. And so I'm really grateful that she was so willing to just like answer all the questions. And I think... it really is the like number one theme that it happens, you know, at such an impressionable age. And, you know, Jess, my friend Allie actually, but I think I had told you a little bit ago, Jess, but she and her other friend are trying to put a program together specifically for women in theater. I mean, I think for everyone in theater, but mostly targeted to women in theater programs, like specifically college BFAs. That are like more intense to really change that view of disordered eating and as far as your job. But I think if there was like talk to or someone that was just like, hey, I'm here, you know, I'm here at like our free in this, you know, or whatever to just and you about any changes you're feeling in your about anything, you know? I feel like that would be so helpful for so many people. But I mean, I feel like that for everyone. I think everyone should go to therapy. I think the world would be a more peaceful place if everyone was required a therapist.
I mean, if everyone was provided a therapist?
Yes, you're correct. If everyone was provided a therapist, like it was just part of what you did, you know what I mean? Like you, that would help. And this week 4 to 6 a day, so that's good. That's like definitely would have never ever in my life happened before. So I guess that's a win. Just not feeling stressed that they're here or nervous that I'm meeting them at all.